It's not only news, it's science breakthroughs. Tomorrow's technologies. Advanced medical techniques. It's a glimpse into the future where we discuss artificial intelligence, earth and energy, enhanced humans, future society, health and medicine, space, robots and machines. Welcome to Science Bites with Joe and Craig.
Today is Thursday, April 15, 2021. The year almost 1,800 people will die from brain cancer in the United States. That may soon change. Recently, scientists have tested a unique vaccine intend to help bodies fight against brain cancer for the first time in humans.
The new research is published in the journal Nature. The German Cancer Research Center researchers have developed a vaccination that triggers an immune response inside a brain tumor tissue. Some incurable brain tumors, called diffuse gliomas, spread throughout the brain, making them nearly impossible to remove. They also don't respond effectively to chemo and radiotherapy.
Brain cancer does have one weakness, a unique gene mutation. The error in the DNA causes a particular protein to exchange in an IDH1 protein structure. The body's immune system recognizes this protein as a foreign because of the mutation doesn't happen in healthy tissue. That is what makes the protein a perfect target for the treatment.
The best part of the research is they are now past phase one of human clinical trials in Germany. As of this broadcast, there have been no side effects recorded, which is even better news. But it even gets better than that. 93% of patients showed a positive response to the vaccine, and 84% survived 3 years after treatment.
The next trial will take the vaccine a step further. The researchers will combine the dose with another treatment, so when the proteins bind to the tumor cells, it ensures that the healthy cells aren't destroyed along with the cancer cells.
That's simply incredible news, Joe. I mean, this is a major step in therapy that could possibly be applied to other cancers as well.
Yeah, it's going to make some great changes. Speaking of gene therapies, Craig, a blind patient regained their vision for 1 year after getting a single injection on an experiment gene therapy directly into their eye.
That sounds so painful. While the retina has no pain fibers, the cornea in the front of the eye has more pain receptors per square inch than anywhere else in the body. And that's just an FYI. So the treatment uses RNA molecules that can infiltrate cells and reverse a specific mutation linked to eye disease that causes blindness early in life. And interestingly, the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine researchers behind the treatment discovered its long-term effects largely by accident.
You know, Craig, well, I'm thinking of it. Isn't the RNA the modification that was into the COVID-19 vaccine?
This is exactly correct. They're using the RNA for a lot of things now.
Yeah. The treatment sneaks RNA into your cells and triggers a specific protein production, essentially reversing the mutation for months at a time.
The researchers first tested out this gene therapy in 2019, where patients were injected every 3 months. Those patients saw continual improvement in their eyesight because the RNA was repeatedly replenished. But one participant only got the initial injection and then backed out over concerns about potential side effects.
The new study focuses on that patient alone and shows that the restored eyesight actually peaked for 2 months after the injection and lasted for over 15 months.
As the study authors explain in the press release, this is a great sign for the treatment and the field of RNA-based gene therapies at large. Longer-lasting benefits would not only potentially drive down the medical bills associated with repeated injections, but give scientists working on other conditions a promising avenue to explore for their own gene therapies.
You know, Craig, before we take a break,
yeah,
let's talk about the space jellyfish.
Yeah.
Well, they're not actually a jellyfish, but it's shaped like one. Researchers have detected ultra-low radio frequencies being emitted from the jellyfish-shaped object in the distant galaxy cluster.
The mysterious object is located 340 million light-years from Earth in the galaxy cluster Abel 2877. The researchers behind a paper published in the Astrophysical Journal say they used the Murchin Wide Field Array radio telescope in Western Australia to discover the ultra-low radio frequencies and its distinct shape.
The researchers dubbed the object USS Jellyfish, but don't be quick to assume that it's the nod to Star Trek. USS actually indicates the ultra-steep spectrum radio frequency.
That takes all the fun out of it.
I know.
But as you can imagine, studying radio frequencies from 340 million light years away presents its own special set of challenges. However, they've been able to develop a working theory of where it came from. Supermassive black holes that created powerful jets of plasma about 2 billion years ago. This plasma faded, went quiet, and lay dormant. Then quite recently, two things happened. The plasma started mixing at the same time as a very gentle shock wave passed through the system. This has briefly reignited the plasma, lighting up the jellyfish and its tentacles for us to see.
The radio telescope will also give researchers a look at some of the first galaxies to have emerged in the universe. It would be cool, though, if they discovered cosmic shark or whale to join the USS Jellyfish in our space aquarium.
Yeah, that would be so cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it would. All right, it's time to take a break now, Greg.
Our national forests. We cherish their beauty. We marvel at their majesty. We embrace their heritage. But do you know how much we depend on our national forests? For clean air, wood for our homes, and drinking water for millions of Americans. So much depends on our national forests, but now they're depending on us. Trees have been devastated by insects, disease, and fires that burn so hot, even the seeds of future forests are destroyed. The Arbor Day Foundation asks for your help in replanting our national forests, because so much depends on what we do today. So much beauty, so much life, so much that we hold dear. We must act now so that future generations can also depend on our national forests. Visit arborday.org. See what we're doing.
Welcome back. Several months ago, Craig and I spoke about the development of creating tiny brains in a lab. This is a follow-up of a controversial experiment.
Experiments that create tiny brain-like structures for human stem cells or transplant human cells into animal brains have made some scientists, ethicists, and religious leaders uneasy in recent years. And the National Institutes of Health, or NIH, have restricted some of this research. Now a U.S. scientific panel has weighed in with advice about how to oversee this controversial and fast-moving area of neuroscience. The panel finds little evidence that the brain, organoids, or animals given human cells experience human-like consciousness or pain, and concludes current rules are adequate for overseeing this work. But they caution that could change, particularly as experiments move into non-human primates.
The NIH is considering lifting a moratorium on funding the chimera experiments. These are studies that create animals carrying human tissue or cells that has been in place since 2015. The moratorium of chimera research suspended not only brain studies, but also projects that aim to grow organs for transplant in pigs and sheep.
The committee examined three types of experiments: those that create neural organoids, tiny clusters of human cells in a dish sometimes called mini-brains, those involving neural transplants, which add human cells to the brain cells of animals, and those that create chimeras, a type of a transplant in which stem cells from one species are injected into the early developing embryo of another. Such experiments have raised concerns that the animals or organoids may have primitive forms of consciousness or feelings.
These experimental systems are powerful models for studying the human brain and identifying disease treatments, and there are strong moral arguments in favor of this research.
The International Study for Stem Cell Research also welcomed the committee's thoughtful analysis and guidance. Next month, the Society expects to release updated stem cell research guidelines that will also cover chimera and organoid research.
We will continue to follow this changing sector on science.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure we'll be reporting back to you soon on it.
Yeah, I can see that. But, you know, in other news, I can say, Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah, more like South America, we have a problem, because the Amazon rainforest now emits more greenhouse gases than the famously lush ecosystem absorbs.
This sobering finding appears in the new study published earlier this month in the journal Frontiers in Forests and Global Change that calculates for the first time the net emissions of greenhouse gases from both human and natural sources in the Amazon basin. A key distinction in appreciating the study's findings is that it does not just concern carbon dioxide. Though carbon dioxide often gets top billing in discussions around climate change, there are many other significant greenhouse gases, including methane, nitrous oxide, aerosols, and sooty black carbon.
So while the Amazon still absorbs and stores an enormous amount of carbon, its net greenhouse gas emissions have tipped from a negative to a positive. Not just because its capacity to absorb carbon dioxide has been damaged by human activity, but also because the transforming landscape has increased emissions of these other greenhouse gases.
For example, the dried out wetlands and compacted soils that result from extensive logging often increase nitrous oxide emissions, and fires used to clear land for livestock and agriculture release particles of soot called black carbon that absorb sunlight and cause localized warming. Part of the issue is that many of the ways in which human activities are changing the Amazon end up being a double or even triple whammies when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions. So, let's say cattle ranches burn a patch of rainforest to create new pasture for their herd. Not only is the carbon dioxide absorbing power of the trees gone, but their stored carbon is released, and the newly barren soil is likely to increase its emissions of greenhouse gases such as methane and nitrous oxide. What's more, the grazing cows belch methane, a greenhouse gas roughly 30 times more damaging than carbon dioxide. Lost forest cover can also change patterns of rainfall and make the rest of the forest hotter and drier, which also tends to increase greenhouse gas emissions. Overall, the pattern starts to sound like a worrisome feedback loop. Deforestation increases greenhouse gas emissions, which increases warming, and that warming then drives increased greenhouse gas emissions, and so on. Okay, it's time for another quick break.
What makes a rainbow bend? Where does the universe end? To know the world from A to Z,
discover science and technology.
Where is the dinosaur? What's on the ocean floor? To know the world from A to Z,
astronomy.
The sun so warm. What makes a winter storm? And what's a quadruped? Why is the planet Mars red? You'll find there's lots to know. And exploring as you go, to know the world from A to Z,
discover science and technology.
A public service message from the National Science Foundation.
Welcome back. For our quick bite today, we're still discussing ways humans continue to evolve as evolution makes changes to humanity.
While we may like to believe our big brains make us rather smarter than the rest of the animal world, our brains have actually been shrinking over the last 30,000 years. The average volume of the brain has decreased from 1,500 cubic centimeters to 1,350 cubic centimeters, which is the amount equivalent to the size of a tennis ball.
There are several different conclusions of why this is. One group of researchers suspect it's a shrinking brain, which means, in fact, we're getting dumber, which I think I better start thinking bigger, Craig.
Historically, brain size decreased as societies became larger and more complex, suggesting that the safety net of modern society negated the correlation between intelligence and survival. But another more encouraging theory says our brains are shrinking not because we're getting dumber, but because smaller brains are more efficient. This theory suggests that as they shrink, our brains are being rewired to work faster but take up less room. There is also the theory that smaller brains are an evolutionary advantage because they make us less aggressive beings, allowing us to work together to solve problems rather than tear each other to shreds. And also, as a side note, although it wasn't in the article, a smaller brain does use less energy.
That brings us to the close of another show. You can find our shows on our website, MySciencebites.com, and on all podcast platforms.
Joe and I are grateful to you, our listeners, because of your support and dedication. We are now listened to in 46 countries, so thank you very much. Please like and subscribe to whatever platform you are listening to us on. We really do appreciate it, and we will be back next month with another new show.